Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Peep State Pandemonium, a production brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com, where we take you down memory lane for a look at professional wrestling the way it used to be, with conversations from those who paved the way. And now the GWH Radio Network presents Peep State Pandemonium.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another edition of Peep State Pandemonium. I'm filling in for Mike Norris tonight. I got Jerry and Bobby with us. Gentlemen, how you doing?
I'm doing good, guys. How are you guys?
I'm doing wonderful, man. We got the rain here just a minute ago, which is, you know, the day's not complete without an inch or two of rain. so it seems to have quit. So I guess everything's well with the world.
Well, you know, all those rain dances and prayers for rain we were doing for all those years, it's finally paying off.
Jeez.
We just had a storm come through here. I mean, it poured thunder and lightning. I mean, it's every afternoon. I mean,
yeah.
Brutal.
I've had so much water down here that the yard won't take any more water. It just stands on top.
Yeah, it can't soak up so much, can it?
I mean, jeez. But I'm not complaining. I guess we need it.
Well, if you'd stop washing your car every day, it'd stop raining. Obviously, we put out today that we want to talk a little bit about the Hall of Fame stuff because it's that time of the year again for the getting ready for the November class of inductions for the class of 2013 inductions this year. Ballots go out here in the next couple of weeks. So just kind of wanted to touch base and talk about that a little bit. But first up, obviously, since you guys were last on, Tinker Todd has passed away. That was, I believe, on the 14th of this month. And did you guys ever cross paths with him?
You know, I don't know if I did or not, Rich. I really don't.
Is this the guy that refereed some there toward the end of his career? Or
I believe he did.
I swapped some emails with him. I never actually met him, but somehow, and I can't even remember how it happened, we got hooked up in some sort of discussion, and we swapped some emails back and forth, but I never actually met him.
Where did he work mostly, Rich? You know?
Just reading through a bio here, he worked, let's see, his birth name was actually Ramon Napolitano. And he actually wrestled as Danny Knapp, wrestled as Tinker Todd, wrestled as Ray St. Clair. Going through the bio here, doing some work in England, obviously, early in his career. I believe that's where he was from, if I'm not mistaken. And him and Billy Two Rivers used to work together. He was 85 when he passed, so he was probably a little bit in the generation ahead of you guys, but... let's see, January 1946, he was finally old enough, served with the Seaforth Highlanders of the British Army and spent time in Korea, Singapore, the Philippines, Jerusalem, Malta, and locations in between. Looks like Singapore was when he first got into pro wrestling. Did some training in the Merchant Navy. I remember reading, you know, I don't remember the content, but I remember reading the interview that he did with Scott Teal many moons ago. And I believe, if I'm not mistaken, and Scott could probably mention this, if, I don't know if he calls in or anything a little bit later in the show if he's hearing this, but he actually, believe, was writing some columns or something that would appear in Scott's magazines for a while.
I think he did, too. That may have been how I originally got hooked up with him, swapping the email. I can't... I think that rings a bell, so I think you're right there.
Yeah, I know that, you know, he rarely showed up in Georgia's stuff, so that's... I'm just not real familiar with him. I know he worked in the Carolinas a bit. I know he did some stuff in Detroit, Australia, pretty much all over the place, but I don't know, to what degree, what kind of worker he was. I've never seen him on video. I don't know anything really other than what I've read.
Where was he living when he died, Rich?
North Carolina.
Well, I'll be dog.
It says here in an article from Slam Wrestling, it says from Greg Oliver, it says that post-wrestling he worked as a carpenter, a hobby he continued after retirement, and briefly ran a restaurant. He and Ruth loved their dogs and traveling in their RV, and he passed away on Sunday, July the 14th in Winston-Salem. I wonder if he ever got down to Mobile. Seems like he would have.
I don't know. I don't ever remember meeting him.
Yeah, it says here in the 70s, it looks like probably toward the tail end of his career, I guess he worked for the IWA, doing some work for Powers.
Hmm.
Anyway, also, Mike had dropped a note that Tom Shaft had passed away, and I haven't found anything about this. Have you guys heard anything about that?
Only what you sent today.
That's the first I heard about it.
I knew Tom Shaft well. He was a good guy. I felt sorry for Tom, He was a funny guy.
God, he was a brute of a fellow, wasn't he? I mean, he was huge.
Yes. Yeah.
I mean, he was just a big man, barrel-chested, good gracious.
Now, keep in mind, we're working on unconfirmed reports, so.
Yeah.
But, I've literally scoured the internet today. I sent a few emails out. Nobody sent anything back saying they'd heard anything. So, I don't know. Maybe there's a little mix up there. Well, guys, ballots do go out in a couple of weeks for the Georgia Wrestling Hall of Fame. And I don't know. If I'm not mistaken, you guys are in it.
Yeah, and I wanted to thank you. That replica of the Georgia heavyweight belt you sent when I was inducted, I thought that was a nice gesture. speaking of video, before we get too far off the beaten path, man, my day just got off to a horrible start today. One of the first things I do every day is I go on the GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com website, and I look at the results from wherever. I found out yesterday, 36 years ago, I was in Griffin, Georgia, and today I went on there, and the match of the day was a match from Portland, Oregon. And I considered Ed Wiskowski my friend until I seen him drop a knee on my buddy Jerry Oates' head today and pin him. I thought, man, that just wasn't called for.
Maybe that's what's wrong with me.
Well,
I've heard several theories on what might be wrong with you, Jerry.
What year would that have been? That was, you were in Portland. Did you see it?
Oh, let's see. Let me go back to it. I can't remember the date, but I can look it up.
It was him
here.
And Skip Young against Easy Ed and
Rose. Yeah, it was in Portland. I want to say it's 1978.
78. Okay.
That's correct.
78.
I'll never forget an interview. He can remember Portland in 1978. I asked him one time. I asked Jerry one time in an interview I was doing with him what it was like to wrestle in Canada. He said he was never there, and we were just kind of going back and forth for a bit. he's like in these results from when he was working with Crockett. He's all in the Toronto results that I was looking at. So I don't know.
But I never worked Toronto.
Well, they must have had somebody working as you.
I worked in the only place in Canada I worked for the Bear Man up in London, Ontario.
McKigney? Or what was his name?
The Bear Man. Richard, I don't even know his name. He had wrestling bears up through there.
Yeah, I'm thinking Dave McKigney, I think, is his name. I may not be even pronouncing that right, but that's the way I read it.
I think you're right. I think his name was Dave.
Yeah.
I went up there with the Haystacks.
Yep. So, guys, a couple things. Just, Hall of Fame, it is that time of the year, and I just figured, okay, well, you guys were about to go through another couple of weeks off, and I saw that, and I was thinking about coming on last week, and I couldn't swing it, but I figured, okay, well, I'll jump on this week, because just to let everybody know. I'm not going to let the cat out of the bag just yet, but there actually is some plans for a return of the Ringside Rap Radio Show, which used to air here on Wednesday nights on the network. It's coming back a little bit bigger and better, I would say. A few more additions to what we do over there. The concept and the theme will be a little bit different. But that's going to be coming back very soon. We're actually going to make an announcement about that on August 3rd. So stay tuned to GWH News, GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com, or RingsideRap.com, and we'll put it out there about what we're doing and when you can expect to hear us back on the air. And I just figured this would kind of be a good start to come back and get my feet wet a little bit on the air because it's been a while. Thanks, guys, for carrying me. Anyway, the Hall of Fame, obviously the origins of the Hall of Fame started way back when. We started GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com, first launched on November 2nd, 2002, and it was the work of a lot of people that had been doing a lot of work, not just behind the scenes putting the website together and getting it up, but, research over the years, just numerous researchers and historians putting stuff together and contributors that were sending me stuff to get up online. And basically from there, celebrating our first year anniversary, we just decided we'd go ahead and start up a Hall of Fame. And more or less it was me and some historians and the crew at GWH that pretty much just started selecting guys that we felt needed to be in. And then over the years it's just kind of morphed, and we've really kind of changed the process every year, just tweaking at it a little bit and adjusting it, making it a little bit better, trying to make sure we keep the integrity of what we're doing, because Bobby jokes about me sending him a replica Georgia heavyweight belt, but we do take it very seriously in what we do, because we want to make sure we honor these guys and pay tribute to the people that entertained us so much over the years. And that's pretty much always been the reason behind GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com and everything we do. And basically now, the last few years, it's been the selection process, or the selection committee has expanded to actually include all the living members of the Hall of Fame. So each one of those people receive ballots every year. They have the opportunity to basically have their say on who should join them in the Hall of Fame. And Bobby, I think you've been actually part of the process from the very beginning, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I may have missed the first year, but pretty well after that, I've kind of been involved a little bit and had the opportunity to vote.
And
Do we get erasure ballots where we can take people out if we change our mind?
You mean like for guys that get dropped on their head by Ed Waskowski?
I kind of lost a little faith in him, but that's...
maybe he has a bad Thursday night or something.
Hey
hold on one second. We've got a few callers on the line. I'll get to them here shortly, but there is one person I want to get to right now that's popped up, and it's Jonathan Williams from our Monday night show, Georgia Wrestling Now, which covers the local scene. He's actually involved in the selection process as well. Jonathan, how you doing, sir?
Doing all right. How are you guys?
All right. Did you want to chime in about the Hall of Fame, or have you got something else?
Well, if anybody listened to Monday's edition of Georgia Wrestling Now, we talked about a Hall of Fame of sorts that Mark Grayson is working on. And he did mention that he is just trying to secure getting a physical building for it. And once that is done, then he will start deciding who should be involved in choosing inductees and stuff. And of course he said Georgia Wrestling History would be involved with that in some way. So if anybody wants to hear more about that, the archive of Monday's show is up. But I am calling for somewhat more selfish reasons as well. My website, WrestlingWithPopCulture.com, last year it won Best Local Blog and Creative Loafing's Best of Atlanta Reader's Choice Award. And this year I am campaigning again, and you can vote up through midnight on Monday, I believe, is the cutoff for the categories that would include Best Local Blog, as well as Best Local Sports Talk Radio, I believe, is one category. So this show could also win if people. It's just a write-in ballot thing, so there's not nominees or anything. But hopefully people will vote for one or both of our shows, or maybe just Georgia Wrestling History Radio Network. But
So, shameless plugs all around, but well deserved last year. Obviously, you got a good thing going over there. And let me ask you this: I know obviously you do some writing for Creative Loafing as well. Are you guarding the ballot box and keeping people from putting things in that don't say wrestling with pop culture?
No, I have no input on the selection. I do some freelance writing for them on occasion. I haven't done much as of late because they, as anyone may have noticed over the past few years, the print publication has gotten thinner and thinner just because of the state of the print publication industry.
Sure.
So they just don't have as much money to go around, I guess, basically. But I do still occasionally write, but most of the stuff I write for them is music oriented or you know, I have done a lot of wrestling stuff, but that was back when WrestleMania was here, so they wanted to jump on that. But I have nothing to do with who wins. So I was just as surprised as anybody actually when I found out that I won last year, because there are lots of blogs, and I honestly didn't think a wrestling blog would win out over all the other different local blogs that there are, because, you know, people can blog about anything, politics or music or food or whatever. But I do think it was in large part because of the wrestling community, the Georgia wrestling community in particular, because I did campaign heavily, and I think a lot of people that may not even know what Creative Loafing is probably voted just because I was posting on Facebook and everything. So I appreciate that, and I appreciate the ability to promote it on Georgia Wrestling Now and other places on Georgia Wrestling History. But, yeah, there are other categories. There's Best Local Athlete, so, of course, wrestlers are athletes, so you could write in whoever your favorite wrestler is, or best. There's Best Sports Team. I don't know if a wrestling promotion would qualify, but I don't see why not if one got enough votes.
Sure, yeah.
But the place to vote is clatl.com/bestofatlanta. And there's Best Local Blog, which is the one I won last year. There's also Best Local Blogger, which I guess is for an actual person. And Best Local Journalist, and Best... basically any category that pertains to wrestling or any of the stuff that we do or I do, this is the week to vote. They split it up into different weeks, so I guess it's not as overwhelming as it used to be. But and also, while I'm at it, Monstrosity Championship Wrestling is doing its first matinee all ages show on August 3rd. It starts at 3 p.m. Doors are at 2 p.m. and it's at Famous Pub, the same venue that it normally runs, also where Progression Pro Wrestling runs, which will be tomorrow night.
Right.
Another good local new wrestling show. If anyone hasn't seen it, I would recommend it. It's Progression Pro is more, it kind of is like the early Ring of Honor days. It's more of a, you know, trying to be a real sport feel.
Right. All in the presentation, yeah.
Right. But, yeah, I guess that's all I had. Did you want me to contribute anything as far as the Hall of Fame stuff goes?
Oh, well, you can make a checkout for $20. Let's see. Yeah, the Hall of Fame, you know, I'd actually heard something about that. And I know there had been some talk, I guess, in the last couple of years about that as well. I don't know. We've never, you know, actually been contacted, at least not me directly. So I'm not familiar with anything that they're doing, but I would like to think that, you know, our Hall of Fame is pretty legit, and you know, we just don't have bricks and mortar. As much as I would love to have it, I'm just not in any kind of financial situation to make things like that happen. But if somebody ever wanted to reach out to us and work with us and, you know, maybe just understand our process. And, you know, actually we can, you know, we were going to talk a little bit about that tonight, coincidentally, but, you know, I think our process is pretty legit, and I'd like for it to be considered the tool. If somebody comes up with a facility, that's just all the better.
I don't know of anyone else that has. I mean, I know like NWA Atlanta has its own Hall of Fame, and there may be other promotions that do that. But I think the one that people pay the most attention to is the Georgia Wrestling History one, as well as the annual Georgia Wrestling History Awards, and you know anything else that pertains to local wrestling. I think obviously it's the most respected source of information and opinions and anything else that has to do with that.
All right, I appreciate that. You got anything else for us before we delve into our more calls?
Listen to Georgia Wrestling Now next Monday.
And go stuff the box, right?
What's that?
And go stuff the box.
Yeah, please do. but next Monday we have we're gonna have someone from Rampage call Rampage Pro Wrestling. I'm not sure exactly who yet. And the Carolina Lizard Man from Monstrosity is gonna call as well.
All right. Very cool.
Those are the scheduled guests. Anyone who's listened recently may realize that we have a lot of unscheduled guests these days too.
All right, man. Well, I appreciate you calling in and letting us know about the stuff going on, and hope you know, best of luck to you, and you know, I guess best of luck to any of our shows.
Yeah, thank you for the opportunity to let your listeners know about all that stuff, and let me have to call in again whenever you need me.
All right, Jonathan, thanks a lot, man.
All right, thank you.
Take care. All right, obviously, let's see, that was Jonathan Williams from our Georgia Wrestling Now Monday night show, which covers the local scene. Got a few callers on the line. Well, actually, first, you know, before we go there, guys, based on what you just heard about, you know, the possibility of an actual facility, does that make a Hall of Fame more legit? Is that something that you guys could get behind? And, you know, obviously, I think it'd be a great thing.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, it would be nice to have a place where, you know, you could actually physically people could come and visit. You know, I mean, there again, too, you go back to supply and demand. Could it be financially viable? You know, the sad part is, and we don't like to talk about this, but the sad part is our generation, the people that watched us, some of them are at the age now where they're just not very mobile anymore, and you know, when this generation dies out, it's sadly a lot of us are going to be just fond memories, and that's the part that I worry about. I mean, I just, if it's because the product has changed so much, I really don't know how you could. Even if you're not, if it's non-profit and you're not trying to make a living, you still got to keep an upkeep on the building, and it just,
right.
I just don't know if it would fly or not.
Yeah, I don't, you know, I guess my first thing is, I don't know, you'd have to have repeat business, because let's face it, everybody's not going to come to this thing, so you got to depend on people that are going to actually just show up more than one time. And, you know, I guess if you were doing some kind of event where you held the inductions in a ceremony type event that could help fund the facility, that'd be great. But I don't know, it just seems like there'd be a lot more overhead and a lot more cost than you're actually going to generate revenue on. But, you know, even the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame that they had down in Macon, you know, as a musician, you know, passionate musician, I only went there once, and you know, there was really no reason to go back. So I don't know. You know, they ended up closing that down, and you know, I don't know if it's something that's, I don't know. As much as I like to think it would be great, I don't know that it would be sustainable. But who knows? You know, I guess you never know unless you lay it all out and, you know, take a look at it. Obviously, you have to have some kind of business plan and some way of making sure you can get it off the ground and keep it going. Have a little promise.
Yeah.
What was that, Jerry?
I was just saying, you know, it'd be tough. But like you said, you'd have to have things going on there, you know.
Yeah, you'd have to have reasons to bring people back repeatedly. because I just, you know, it seems to me, I don't know, once you, it's kind of like, you know, think about any type of attraction that you guys have gone to around any city in Georgia. I mean, you know, you go to it, and, well, you've pretty much seen it, you know, and I don't know, do you go back? Maybe 10 years later you go back and see something that's new, you know, or what all's happened since then.
Yeah. I'm as big a football fan as there is, I guess, and I've been to the Football Hall of Fame in Canton, Ohio. We drove up there as part of our vacation one year, and I thoroughly enjoyed it. I mean, I spent 4 hours walking around this little place up there just mesmerized by what I was looking at, but I've never been back. And if I ever got in the neighborhood, I would probably go again, but I would never drive up there again and just do it. Do what?
What do they charge to go in there?
Debbie, you remember what they charged us to get in the Football Hall of Fame? It's $15, maybe $10, something like that. It wasn't outrageous, and I mean, it was. Of course, you know, to me, it was I wouldn't have cared what it was when I got there, but it's just, you know, once you see it, you know, I mean, of course they're constantly changing it. I mean, it's like the Smithsonian. We've been to the Smithsonian in the 26 years we've been married. We've been to the Smithsonian probably 7-8 times. And the thing about the Smithsonian is they change it. They'll go in and they'll take displays down and put new displays up. So when you go one time and you go back, I can remember telling somebody, we took my mom and my uncle up there, and I was telling them about something I had seen. And when I got there, it wasn't there.
So basically kind of like...
They circulate the stuff, so.
Yeah, well, it's kind of like an art gallery where they bring in different,
right,
you know, work with different artists, and, you know, how many times you go to the High Museum? Quite a bit, you know.
Yeah.
Well, I tell you what, before we get back into the conversation about the process, the Hall of Fame, what we do here, and who's in, and I want to talk a little bit about the merits of who's in and maybe who you guys think should be in that isn't. We're going to tackle that a little bit later here. But let me get some of these callers. Maybe they're just on the phone listening. I'm not sure. We got somebody from the 706 area code. You're on the line with us. Who are we speaking to? All right. We're not speaking to you. I love that. All right. Somebody from the 770 area code on the line. Are you going to join us?
Hello?
Hello. It had to be. It had to be. Charlie Smith.
Hello.
Speaking of Hall of Famers.
Yeah. I think we ought to have one, you know, but ain't nobody gonna spend no money for it. If you get somebody who's got plenty of money that they wanna waste to put into it, it'd be all right.
How about Smith Novelty Company being a corporate sponsor?
Oh, right, that T-shirt company got plenty of money. They told me when I come back from Florida, I said, Warren's going to be running a T-shirt company.
Oh, Lord. All right, Charlie.
Tate?
I'm doing well, sir. It's been a while. It's good to hear you.
Good to hear from you, sir.
All right. Tell you what, let me put you on hold for just a second. Were you tuning in to listen, or were you tuning in to speak with us and hang out with us?
I'll just go hang out with you.
Okay. Well, let me put you on hold for just a minute, and let me go see who this
go
is
ahead.
Over on the other line. All right. Somebody from the 850 area code, are you calling in to speak with us, or are you listening?
Yes.
Hello?
Have you got me?
Yep. Who are we speaking with?
This is Bill Bowman.
Oh, Bill Bowman, how you doing, sir?
I'm doing
another
fine.
Hall of Famer. Another guy we need to get in the Hall of Fame here.
That's what I was going to ask. Was Joe and I included in all that? You know, we wonder about it.
You know, you have been on the list previously, and you're not currently. Which actually, let me go through that process just a little bit for people that aren't familiar with it. Let me actually bring that information up. Uh, you guys can talk amongst yourselves.
Well, I, yeah,
we don't need all
say,
this dead air while I'm
I haven't actually looked over this thing, but yeah, there's this two guys that should be in the Hall of Fame.
Well, I appreciate that, Bobby. We just wondered, you know, I'm 80 years old and Joe is 73, and so.
I think that Mustang that was going to do all the confessing should be in there, too. Maybe we could
yes.
do a display.
Yeah, really.
That'd be good for the Hall of Fame, put some of the cars in there, like
oh,
two.
Oh, jeez.
The
well,
yeah,
here's,
blue
here's
and white.
Some brick and mortar from the Falcon's Rest.
Yo,
oh, God. Oh.
All right, yeah. All right, here's the deal. In order to be inducted, an individual must be selected on 75% of the ballots. Individuals on the ballots who go unselected on 100% of the ballots for three consecutive years will be removed. In addition, anyone who receives no selections on 50% of the ballots is removed after five consecutive years. We've created an oversight committee made up of individuals from the selection committee who can collectively make decisions to overturn omissions or present inclusions for nomination if it believes such omission or inclusion to be significant toward preserving the integrity of the Georgia Wrestling Hall of Fame. Got that?
I got it.
In other words, the committee needs to step in on that one.
Yeah. And we've actually, you know, in terms of revamping it, because, you know, we as I mentioned at the top of the show, we've kind of adjusted this thing and tweaked at it over the years as we found, you know, slights or you know, trends that were maybe going away they shouldn't have based on the way things were playing out. We've actually got it. Everybody now is in a category based on their era. Tag teams are in their own individual section so that they don't get slighted. And then we've got people like referees, TV guys, bookers, you know, et cetera, promoters. All those guys are in their own category as well. So that we noticed that kind of started straightening some things out. And since we've turned it over to the living members of the Hall of Fame having a say as well, it's maybe, you know, one of those things where we've asked everybody every year, if there's anybody you don't see on this ballot that should be, please recommend them and we'll get them on there. So you guys on this year's ballot, currently you're not listed, but based on the conversation here, we'll put you on there and we'll see how it goes again.
All right, sir. Well, we were just curious.
All right.
And we were listening to your show and trying to find out what's going on.
Yep.
Well, if you happen to figure out what's going on, would you call back in, sir? We're here every week. Don't know what's going on.
I always call Charlie Smith. He tells me what's going on.
Well, speaking of Charlie, let Charlie tell you what's going on. Charlie, you there?
Yeah.
Tell Bill what's going on.
Me. I'm the only thing that's going on. Man, Bobby Sevens, you know.
Wait a minute.
Man, Bobby Sevens would control Las Vegas now. Y'all know that, don't you? Rich, you ought to come to Las Vegas, sir. You'd enjoy it.
I'd probably get in trouble in Vegas, Charlie.
No, you wouldn't. But I'd sit you down there with Bobby. You would have a good look at everybody goes by. I sit Bobby down, you know. Anytime they have a picture made, I'm not in the picture there. How about
no.
Bobby? I'm out politicking.
Charlie, every picture of every wrestler I've ever seen, you're in.
Well, Bobby.
No, I'm working selling shirts. See, when there's work involved, you don't get many pictures
okay.
of him.
Oh, he's at the gimmick table. Okay.
Hey, the gimmick table's been real good the last 2 weeks.
Have they?
Yes, sir. They've been drawing good crowds up in Monroe.
Yeah, that what are they calling that now? Southern Fried Championship Wrestling? Yeah.
I don't even know what it is.
Yeah, tell me about that first show they did, or that last show they did.
What a guy.
Drawing a good crowd?
Oh, yeah, they had about 300.
Right.
They had 288 chairs out. And they were all full, and they had some people standing, too. And they're going to move to the National Guard Armory the 26th of August, I think, or something like that. And they got Bob Armstrong there. And
We got information on that tonight. That'll be August 24th.
August 24th,
yep.
It's the National Guard Armory.
Yep.
And,
hey, Jerry, when are you going to start running the Columbus again?
I'm done, brother.
We're going to run Tybee Island next.
I have to send a rig up out on the beach out there.
Yeah, and special bonus match, Jerry Oates versus the Alligator. I think we got something here.
Yes, sir. I think that's good, Bobby.
They call us.
I'll shoot him out of the cannon, Bobby.
What?
Have him shot out the cannon. Out into the ocean.
That's for the return.
You won't shoot that ocean.
Oh, I'm sorry. You heard about that, didn't you, Mr. Tate?
No. No.
They were shooting Jerry out of the cannon at the circus.
Oh, okay.
But they talk about that guy missing the rope. What was it, Bobby? Missed? Put him in the hospital.
The man.
They don't want to do that no more.
Mr. Tate.
Yes.
Bill Bowman.
Yep.
Go ahead. You know, you were talking about having a museum type thing. You ought to call Bob Kelly. Bob Kelly is having fun putting his together down the Gulf Coast. I'm not associated with it anymore. But you ought to talk to him, and he'll let you know real quick. It's very costly, and they have to do all kind of gimmicks to get trying to force people to eat certain things. And I don't know how Bobby and him are going to do about that, but anyway. But let me get out of here, and I appreciate listening to you guys, and we'll see you next time around.
All right, Bob.
Bye. Have
a good
night, Bob. Yeah.
I love you, my friend. Stay out of trouble.
All right, so what's the story on what Bob's doing?
Well, Bob...
Bob
took one corner of the building down there, and somebody that he knows, Kelly's dream is to build a Hall of Fame. But not only, he calls it the Lee Fields Memorial Hall of Fame or something. I'm not sure exactly what the name is. But Lee was involved not only in wrestling but in race car driving. So last year he had his first inductions where he inducted some race car drivers and some wrestlers. And one referee that they threw in there because they figured that he was so old he might not, you know. Anyway, they put it up, and he built this thing over in the corner. I don't know what it cost. It's a neat little thing. I mean, it's a nice thing, you know, as far as the visual of it. It's in the building where the reunion is. This year he's trying to put together some sort of awards banquet for Thursday night of the reunion, which is going to cost above and beyond a reunion, and they're going to have it catered, and it's going to be a little different thing. I got nothing against it. I'm not that gung-ho over it, but it is what it is. It's his pet project. I just we'll see how it goes. I don't know how his response is going to be to it, but... we'll see.
All right. Hey, Jerry, you had an interesting response to me when I asked you if you were going to run a show. It was almost as adamant as the time Dan Masters, we were on the air with you, Dan Masters asked you, we should set up a ring, and you said, and do what? I'm sorry, but the moment it absolutely cracked me up. I laughed uncontrollably for about 2 minutes. Speaking of the man who's hoping you'll set up a ring on Tybee Island, Dan Masters is with us. Dan, how you doing tonight, sir?
No rings on Tybee. Maybe Long Beach, California, but you just had to throw my name in there, you dirty bastard, Rich Tate. I want to call in and say hello to you gentlemen on the line tonight, and also Charlie.
Thank you.
No, I was just sitting back listening, man. I hope you guys are doing well. Everything's going fine out here in California.
Yeah, Dan's got the big life going on now.
Oh, please, let me tell you, cashing the checks daily, right?
All right, man.
You come to Las Vegas, you're that close next year.
Yeah, I'll come over and see you next year in Vegas if I'm still here.
Yeah.
If I'm not incarcerated, I'll be there.
Oh, God.
Let's not go
don't
there.
Use that word.
And you're going to be in Charlotte next weekend, right?
I will be in Charlotte the 1st through the 4th. Yeah, getting out of here next Wednesday, and I'll be there through Monday at the NWALegends.com Mid-Atlantic Legends Fan Fest 2013, home of the taping of Mid-Atlantic Memories, the documentary, and all the other festivities, Fan Fest, Q&A sessions, live matches to be included. It's going to be fun.
Awesome. Well, you have a safe trip, man, and
Yeah, but don't hang up on me. I call it the listen.
What's that?
I call it the listen, so don't hang up on me.
I won't hang up on you. Take care.
Okay. See you.
All right. So anyway, Charlie, I'm going to put you back on hold here for just a moment.
Yeah.
Let us talk a little bit about the Hall of Fame, guys. Obviously, we talked about, you know, the inclusion and exclusion and omissions and whatnot and the oversight committee, and we probably need to have the oversight committee take a look at some stuff. But for the most part, how do you guys feel about the process and the way it works? You've both been involved here. Well, Jerry's been involved now for at least the last couple of years.
Right.
Well, I think it's as fair across the board as you can get it. I mean, it's blind. I mean, nobody knows what I put down until I send the ballot in, and nobody knows what Jerry puts in or anybody else that's actually on the selection committee. And I guess, you know, all of us have got different ideas about what guys did and how they did and how they performed. Some of the eras, the older areas, some of these names I don't recognize, so I just kind of gloss over those.
Right. Which goes to justifies why we split them up into categories, because we had, you know, essentially we were seeing a trend where a specific later era was happening, but we had there's a lot of historians that are on the committee, and they would be arguing, you know, just loudly that, you know, somebody from a much earlier era did deserve to go in, and they were largely being ignored. So we figured, okay, well, you know, let's break it down to the eras, and basically the guys who worked, you know, where their most work was in that period, that's where they would fall. And then, you know, suddenly we started seeing an influx of, you know, people from a certain era getting in and not being slighted so much. It wasn't to make it easier for anybody, but it was to make sure that, you know, people that deserved to be in there had their shot, you know, among the people that actually knew about them. So that was, you know, justification for doing that. Now, is there anybody on looking at the ballot I sent out today, like, you know, who's on the ballot as of right now? Obviously, you know, a couple of inclusions we want to make just specifically with Bill and Joe. But there's another couple of teams that I actually noticed when I got home tonight after I'd already sent this email that we were talking about putting in from last year. But on the ballot, when you guys look down that ballot, is there anybody in there that you're really surprised has not cracked membership yet?
Well, I'm looking at it now. I actually printed it out because I'm not smart enough to remember all of this stuff. You know. Orton Sr. jumps out at me. Buddy Fuller jumps out at me from that era. Joe Scarpa. All these guys had good runs here.
Yep.
Eddie Graham, did you ever work with Paul DeMarco, Jerry?
No, I never did.
I never got to be in the ring with him. I always wanted to, but... From what I remember about him, what a smooth worker he seemed to be. I mean, just...
He was a bump-taking son of a gun.
Yes, he was. Yes, he was.
After he left here, he went to where? Frisco, and that was the last I heard of him.
Last time I saw him, he was working as a Russian for Vern. He had shaved his head.
Yeah, I think that was early 80s.
Yep, he was working for Vern as a Russian.
Yep. And from what I understand, he's still around.
Is that right?
He's living out on the West Coast, last I heard.
Well, somebody told me he was in the jewelry business. I don't know. I never got to meet him. I mean, just I can remember watching him. I watched him as a kid growing up for when he had his run here, and I saw the maybe in my teen years when he came in here and he had his run here, and they pushed him. I've watched matches on him on tape. Just quite a performer. I mean, he just. But I love
where was he from, Rich?
You know, I'm not real sure. Not real sure. I know that he did spend some time on the West Coast, and from what I understand, he retired there. I don't know if he actually originated from that area or not or what, but I don't know. Never really knew that much about him other than just the work I've seen and in results and stuff. Never even seen an interview with him, so I'm not even I don't know that I've ever seen video of him other than the stuff he did with Vern. And that was at the tail end of his career. But I've never heard anything other than just how great, and as Bobby said, smooth. That seems to be a word that gets used a lot.
Oh, geez, he was just, I'm just sitting here thinking about it. Look at this ballot here from the 73 through the 84. I mean, just looking down the name.
Well, let's go back first to the 58 to 72. Since we were on it. Just running down that list, as of right now, here's the list for this year's ballot. Bob Orton Sr., Buddy Fuller, Donna Christianello, Eddie Graham.
Christiantello.
All right. Joe Scarpa, Johnny Valentine, Lenny Montana, Louis Tillet or Tillet?
Tillet.
All right. Mighty Yankee, which, of course, was Roger McKay, and Paul DeMarco, Skander Akbar, and Tarzan Tyler. That's an incredible list of guys.
That is heavy right there.
You could probably run a territory with that list.
You probably could. And just going back, just running back to the earlier two eras, 1883 to 1943, you have Dick Davis Court, Dorv Roach, Honey Boy Hackney, Jack Ross, Joe Stecker, Man Mountain Dean, and Milo Steinborn still out there on the ballot. Then 1944 to 57, you got Al Galento, Argentina Rocca, Art Nelson, Bibber McCoy, Chief Big Heart, Farmer Powell, Jim Cofield, Johnny Long, Mildred Burke, Ray Vilmer, and Tarzan White. And then, of course, Bobby had already moved up to 73-84. Who stands out? Well, let me just run down the list. Austin Idol, Buzz Sawyer, Ernie Ladd, Jack Briscoe, Harley Race, Jake Roberts, Joyce Grable, Kevin Sullivan, the Mongolian Stomper, Ox Baker, Paul Orndorff, Robert Fuller, Roberto Soto, Ron Garvin, the Spoiler, Ted DiBiase, and Wahoo McDaniel. There's your territory.
Right there.
Yeah.
Who on this list just had you shaking your head going, how's this person not gotten through yet? Other than all of them.
Well, yeah. And there again, too, now, are we talking from a fan perspective or from a wrestling perspective that's having been in the ring with most of these people, if not all of them? I've been in the ring with all of them.
I think it's some of all of it.
Yeah.
The integrity of the person.
Yeah. Well, the criteria, as we explain it, is... the general criteria for everyone other than the miscellaneous category is to honor those who had a high level of success for a reasonable period of time, had strong drawing power, worked hard to master their craft, and positively carried themselves well for the promotions in which they worked. The criteria for the miscellaneous category, which of course miscellaneous is bookers, promoters, referees, TV announcers, etc., and managers, the criteria for them is to honor those who provided the strong presence, whether it be in a leadership role in management, working with the office in some fashion, or perhaps as a referee or announcer. So Yeah,
given those, and here again, this is Bobby's opinion, and my opinion, and $2 will get you a cup of coffee somewhere. But you see, I couldn't say Idols fit that category, even though he had a good run here. I mean, you know, I couldn't vote for Sawyer.
Nope.
Ernie Ladd, I'd vote for him for anything he wanted to run for. Wonderful guy, never give anybody any problems, always showed up. Had drawing power. Jack Briscoe, same thing. Harley Race, same thing. Jake Roberts, heck of a worker. He had some personal issues, and hopefully he's on the right road now. Joyce Grable, she's probably the first girl that probably should crack this list, just simply being from Georgia. Kevin Sullivan, Mongolian Stomper, Archie Goldie. He was just kind of in and out of here. And the thing about Archie was, if Archie decided to go home, he just left. Didn't matter what was going on, what angle he was involved in, and he did it more than once. Ox Baker, can't say anything bad about Ox other than he was clumsy and kill you. Roberto Soto's a name that jumps out on this list at me.
Yeah,
I think he was very underrated by the public, but. What a hand he was! Never gave anybody any trouble. He did whatever you asked him to do. He was always on time. He was he never showed up drunk. He never showed up pilled up, and just gave you 100% every night. You don't hear that said about a lot of people, but that's just fact. Ron Garvin, that's a good choice. The Spoiler, you know, he had drawing power, but I mean, you know, he had personal issues as well. And DiBiase and Wahoo, I mean, what a list. I mean, but like I say, some of those people that just things I know that, you know, I couldn't in good conscience vote for them.
Jerry, your thoughts on anybody there?
I know Soto should be there. I mean, without a doubt,
that
was he was like Bobby said, he was underrated. He really was. That boy could do anything in that ring. He was very underrated. And the ones that Bobby said he couldn't vote for, I agree with him 100% on that. That's just stuff that we knew, you know. I mean, you know, not dependable, come in sideways or not come in at all, or you're not knowing what kind of shape it was, you know, from induced stuff, you know. If you in anything, if you don't take pride in what you do, you know, and especially if you've ever promoted and, you know, you got guys coming in, you don't know what kind of shape they're going to be in. To me, they're not worth anything. Because if they don't show up, then what do? You know, if they're not dependable, no matter how much they can draw you, you know, they can kill you in another way, too.
Right.
Yeah, because
right.
You're putting your personal integrity, as a promoter, you're putting your integrity on the line when you advertise these people.
Well, the people trusted you, not them.
That's exactly right.
You advertise so-and-so, where are they? You know, that's the guys don't think about that.
Hey, Bobby, you don't have to go there if you don't want to, but I noticed you had something to say about everybody except for Kevin Sullivan.
Kevin, I mean, I don't. I have nothing against Kevin Sullivan. Kevin Sullivan never. I mean, he was always there. I never noted him to do anything out of the way or wrong or whatever. I just his. You talk about his drawing power. If that's part of it, I'm not sure Kevin had that drawing power here. If you put Kevin Sullivan's name on a poster, I'm not sure that drew you a crowd. I mean, at the time, I know later on when he turned heel and he did some of the other stuff, I was not following it. I'd already got out of the business and I didn't follow it that well, so I don't know how that got over. But just as when he was here as a babyface, he never was on top. He you know, middle card, sometimes semi main event. Depending on circumstances, most time that was in a tag match, but there again, I guess it just all fits in as part of the criteria. Why, I got nothing against him. I mean, I liked him as a person. I just didn't really mean to gloss over him, but that was just.
Well,
I'm
let me
not
ask
sure.
this. Let me ask this about Roberto Soto, drawing power wise. Roberto, you put Roberto above Kevin Sullivan in that regard?
Yes, I do. Soto at one time, God, what year was it? Well, let's see, we had split in 72. So somewhere in early 72, they put the Georgia heavyweight title on him.
Right.
And he had a good run with it, and he brought it over to Gunkel with him, and he held on to it until he finally got an offer to go to Florida that he couldn't refuse, and he turned his notice and he left. And he left with no hard feelings. He just did what he had to do to for his career. Soto worked on top and drew, I think he drew good houses. They ran an angle one time, and this was a Renesto creation. It started out in the opening match, Billy Spears and Roberto Soto against each other. And they did an opening match and stole the show. And the next week they moved them up a little bit, and then a little bit, and finally they're in the main events and they're drawing houses, and it was sort of like Wayne and Ted. Wayne Cow and Ted Oates did the same thing
right.
with them. I mean, they were drawing sellouts in these spot shows because people thought they was going to kill each other.
Well, let me ask you about that name. You just brought up another name that, maybe, I don't know, does Dutch Mantel from the Wayne Callen era, does he belong on this list as an eligible nominee?
Well, yeah, I mean, well, he came back.
I mean,
as
he
Dutch
really
Mantel
only had
well,
that one run, but,
yeah.
I know people still talk about that run today, so I don't know. Is that something? Him and Ted,
I mean, honestly, the police in Atlanta, they'd see them coming toward the ring, and they thought it was a shoot. They went, "Oh God, here they come!" I mean, it was being in there and up close and personal through some of those things. It was, I mean, I can't. I would say yes. I think Wayne Cowan would be an outstanding nominee, just for the people that remembered if they were there and they lived through that thing. And then later on, when he became Dutch Mantel, I know he had a good. He came back through and did some stuff here, but that's another name.
All right, let's obviously move into a little bit of a different era, but 85 to 2001, which more or less covers the period post GCW as the national expansion era. And of course, at that point, it's also this was kind of the dicey category when we started this one up. Previously, we didn't start this category until just a couple years ago. We previously stopped at the end of 84. My concern here was, well, you've got the national expansion guys out of the Georgia-based WCW. You've got the guys who were working for Blackwell, the guys who were working for Jerry, the guys who were working for Jody, the smaller promotions, Peach State. And then you get, really right up to 2001, we're talking early NWA Wildside type era here as well. So you end up mixing a lot of guys where a lot of our selection committee who maybe aren't locally familiar with the Georgia territory, they don't know who some of these names are. So I was really kind of concerned about this going in. But so far for the first couple of years, I think the right people have been selected. And primarily I'll say that just because Ted Allen got in. On that first year that we had this category, a lot of people that remember Ted Allen on the national level, but never really knew of him just around the Georgia, what he's done, what he had done for so many years here, under the radar, under the national radar, they're probably looking at that going, why is he on this list? Well, I don't think there's a guy out there on this scene today that can't tell you stories about how he taught them something, how he worked with them, how he trained them, how he worked a show they were on, and he offered them a little advice after a match or anything. Everybody knew who Ted was, and everybody wanted to be with Ted and work with Ted. Am I overstating that at all?
No.
I mean, even you down in Columbus, when you got started back up down there, he was one of your cornerstone guys. You had
nothing but
a young talent, but you had him in there.
He was the only guy you could put in there with him. And it was for not the benefit of the people that bought a ticket, but it was the benefit of to help bring somebody along that you thought you might could use, you know, down the road.
Right.
He deserves, if anybody in that era, for sure, he did. He deserved it.
And just going through the names in this category: Barry Windham, Big Van Vader, Bill Goldberg, Billy Black, Booker T, the Botswana Beast, Bret Hart, Buff Bagwell, Chick Donovan, Chris Benoit, Chris Jericho, Dallas Page, David Young, Disco Inferno, Doug Summers, the Giant, of course, Hulk Hogan, Jeff Jarrett, Joel Deaton, Ken Timms, Kevin Nash, Lex Luger, Mike Golden, Nick Busick, Randy Rose, Randy Savage, Ranger Ross, Rick Michaels, Ron Simmons, Scott Hall, Scott Steiner, Sid Vicious, Sonny Siaki, Steve Lawler, Sting, Terry Lawler, Tully Blanchard.
Now, all these guys worked Georgia?
Well, you got the WCW crew, because that was heavily Georgia. They were based in Georgia.
Okay.
So they that counts. And then that's what's mixed up with, you know, what was working all the smaller regional independent promotions.
Right.
That's why I was concerned when we started this category. Was I was afraid of what kind of trends we might see. We might still get the local guys slighted. But, you know, as I said, you know, Ted goes in that first year, and that told me, you know, just it was working. And, you know, I think for the most part, until we see that maybe it's trending away from making sense, you know, maybe we break that category up in like a A-B type category based on, you know, where their primary body of work was at that time. We'll have to play that over time.
Well, you know, looking down that list, the names that jump out to me are the guys that are local here. Billy Black. Billy Black been working these independent shows for 100 years. Great hand. You know, shows up, does what he's supposed to. You know, and for different reasons, he never was a main eventer here. And so if you use drawing power solely, then this guy probably wouldn't fit in. But Doug Summers. Doug Summers has been working for 40 years or 35 years. And same kind of deal. Shows up every night, goes out, does what he's asked to do. He never got a strong push in Georgia. He just always was middle of the card. But there again, too, you know, if lasting power has anything to do, then Doug Summers is a name you got to look at.
Yep.
Another guy jumps out on that list to me, Steve Lawler. Steve's, you know, and of course his brother Terry is working a lot more here lately, but Steve... You know, Steve worked for years, and he was one of the top heels on the independent scene around here. And Charlie was talking about them drawing 300 people in Monroe the other night. The main event was Steve Lawler against Tommy Rich.
Yep.
Steve actually came out of retirement because they had worked an angle with Terry the show before. So, you know, that's another name you got to look at.
Yeah, and they're building that August 24 show that Charlie was talking about earlier. Steve's going to work with Terry against Tommy and Bob Armstrong.
Okay.
That's the return on that. You know, and then you look and, you know, Chick Donovan, for the love of God, you talk about 100 years, he's been working the scene for 100 years.
To quote our friend Ole Anderson, some things never change, and I'll leave it at that.
Then we get on down to the tag teams currently on the ballot. Arn Anderson and Tully Blanchard, Billy and Bad Boy Hines, the Blazers, which of course was Ray Lloyd and R.D. Swain, Dick Slater and Bob Orton Jr., which to me, I never got to see these two work. If I did, I was too young to remember it. But I've never heard anything about those guys that was less than stellar. And if I'm not mistaken, Gary Hart put them together here in Georgia in 1975 or 6.
He did, somewhere in there. He managed them.
Yeah, and they ended up staying together for a couple of years. Georgia,
yep.
Florida, I think maybe a little Carolinas as well. Let's see, Don and Red McIntyre, Doom, of course, Ron Simmons and Butch Reed. Then, of course, the Garvins, mixing Ron, Terry, and Jimmy. All eligible there. Booker T and Stevie Ray as Harlem Heat. Jerry Brown and Buddy Roberts as the Hollywood Blondes. Another team that I'm kind of shocked they're not in. Kurt and Carl Von Brauner, going back into the 60s there. The Midnight Express, taking Dennis Condrey, Bobby Eaton, and Stan Lane all together. The Nightmares being Ted Allen and Billy Starr. The Outsiders, Kevin Nash and Scott Hall. Fred Avery and Jim Bryant as the Pretty Young Things. The Steiner Brothers, the Rock and Roll Express, and Steve Lawler and Dennis Gale. What about the Hollywood Blondes, you guys? Thoughts on
which one are you talking about?
Jerry Brown and Buddy Robert. Yep.
You know, I was never around. I was around Buddy Roberts. I was never around Jerry Brown.
He was like you described DeMarco as a bump taker. So was Jerry Brown, and well, Buddy Roberts. You know how he was, but so was Jerry Brown. They were the original concept when the Hollywood Blonde thing was put together was Dandy Jack Donovan and Buddy Roberts, and then they brought Jerry Brown in. Somehow Dandy Jack got figured in some other way, and they brought in Jerry Brown. But I was around them a little bit when they were working for here in the office, then the split came. They worked for Ann for a while, and then they left us, went to Florida, and wound up back here in Georgia working for the other for NWA office. But yeah, they were a good team. And then when they went back to Florida, I think they put Humperdinck with them.
I was too young to see the Hines brothers, but what do you guys know about them?
They definitely need to be there.
Yeah, they should.
Without a doubt.
Yeah. Yeah.
Von Brauners.
I should say the Von Brauners. Yeah, that's... the Garvins, I think you got to look at them kind of realistically, too. Another team that... They were just
especially when the McGuire twins and I worked with them.
The McGuire twins.
Oh, World Six Man Champions, the McGuires and Jerry Oates.
Man, should they be on this list, guys?
No,
they should be on the list. All right,
by themselves.
Do you have a mini bike riding category on here?
Oh, my God. Of course, if they were on the list, they would hurt the list. All right. Miscellaneous category. Of course, let's see. We got Ben Masters, Bill Behrens, Bonnie Blackstone, Choo Choo Lin. There's a guy I always wanted to know more about, Choo Choo Lin. What do you guys know about him?
He was a trip. Choo Choo was something. He was in the league all by himself. He loved the business and... Yeah, he was, I don't know when he started working, way back. And he was, you know, they'd use him every now and then, you know, after I got in the business. But he was around him, Bobby.
Yeah. You're pretty
I'm
well.
Stuck. Help me, help me.
You're pretty well described. The Big Train was he was a large fella, and he's just old country boy. And he did. He loved this business, and he took care of Macon for Mr. Ward. That's right. What he was doing when I met him. And he was always at the shows there in Macon. And every once in a while, Mr. Ward would throw him a bone and put him in a match there, and they took care of him. You'd have to get Ted Oates to tell the story about him. He had a pair of flip flops one time he had bought, and he took them out of the bag, and they were them sort of straw flip flops, not regular rubber ones. And they were, when you looked at them, you couldn't tell. You know, they were, I don't know what you'd call it, but you could wear them on either foot. There wasn't a left and a right, And I forget where they were made. They were made in Guatemala somewhere. And he started fussing. Ted was agging him on about the shoes wasn't made in the United States. So he was in his own little world sometime. But the train was all right.
All right. And continuing on the list, Doug Smith. Is Doug still with us?
Doug's still with us. Lives in Williamson, Georgia. Can't get him to, or Williamson or Con. No, he lives in Concord. Can't get him to go to no reunions or nothing. Charlie Smith's talked to him every once in a while.
All right, then we got Eddie Smith, and then what was it with referees having to have the last name Smith?
Well, they were all kind of branch kin. They were all related one way or another.
It sounds like it, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Eddie needs to be in there. Without a doubt. The abuse he took from Uncle Lawrence and being in there.
And Jack of all trades could do anything.
Yes, he could.
He could take a watch apart and put it back together, but he just did it at his own pace.
All right, and then continuing on down the list, Eric Bischoff, Homer Odell, who was once a colonel. At some point he was a general. So he got promoted for something somewhere along the way.
Good manager.
What do you guys remember about him?
Homer should be in there. Really. I don't know if he was ever around him, Bobby.
I met him, but I never got to work with him. The funniest thing I ever heard about Homer Odell, Joe Hamilton tells. They were leaving Athens one night, and he was riding with Jody, and Jody told him, said, we've got this beer store over here I'll stop at. And he said, I'll pull around back. And he said, what you do, you walk up to the window, the drive-through window, and tap on window. He said, they'll raise the window and wait on you. We don't have to go into the public. Well, at the matches that night, some guy had jumped in the ring, and Homer had just wore this guy out with his cane. So when they went over to the beer store that night, Jody was sitting there with a mask on. He told Homer, he said, walk over and tap on that window and get what you want. So when one of them tapped on the window, Jody said the window went up, and he said all he saw was a fist come out the window and hit Homer right in the mouth. He said then the window went back down. Said it was the guy he had beat up with the kid who was working it. So, said Homer swore he set him up, but Joe said he didn't know nothing about it.
Oh, you gotta love it. All
can't
right,
beat
going
live
down
entertainment.
Going down the list, Hugh Butler. He was promoter in Carrollton.
Promoter in Carrollton, yep.
And then Gerald Briscoe, J.C. Dykes.
There's another one
gotta
probably
be.
Should be in there.
Without a doubt.
J.J. Dillon, Jerry Blackwell, Jerry Oates. Who's that guy? I recognize that
name. Keep going.
That'd be, well, you're already
category.
In there.
So this is as a promoter, right?
Yeah, this would be for promoter. Jerry's already in as part of the tag team with Ted.
Yeah.
So this would be recognizing his work as a promoter and trainer.
So does that mean he gets two replica belts?
Yeah.
Okay.
And then
one would be all right.
Oh, you didn't get one? I'm kidding.
Yeah. Well, it's like the Stanley Cup. It gets passed around.
Oh, what's wrong with that?
Yeah, Bobby won't let go of it. Jim Carlisle, announcer down in Columbus, right?
Yep.
Right.
Yeah.
And I never got to hear him do anything. What tell me about him. Was he Gordon Solie? Was he?
He was very good.
Whose ballpark was he in?
He wasn't Gordon Solie. He was Jim Carlisle. He was. Lance Russell did a great job in Memphis, but to me, Lance Russell came off as cartoonish. I don't know if that's the right way to say that or not. Gordon Solie was like the professor. He knew he could talk above your head if he wanted to, and you know whether it was an actual word or whatever. But you know, Gordon could convince you. You know, well, Jim Carlisle just called it like he saw it. He was a
and Jim had you know he worked with WRBL there.
Yeah, he was a TV guy.
Where they got him from. And not because I'm from Columbus and he was there, but there was only one Gordon Solie. You know, there's Gordon and the rest. That's Greg Brown's favorite saying. But he he was as good as anybody.
Yeah.
He wasn't, like Bobby said, he wasn't cartoonish. He was straightforward, and I thought he did a wonderful job.
And scared to death of the guys.
He
was nervous when he'd get around us.
And, you know, that was live TV, too. I mean,
yes,
so he did a wonderful job. If that answers your question, he was very good. He really was.
All right, moving on down the list, Jim Cornette, Jim Ross, Jimmy Rivers, Joe Pedicino.
Who's Jimmy Rivers?
He was a referee that was referred to us to put on the list by a few people. Apparently worked the independent scene within that era. I'm not real familiar with him, so I just kind of have to take a pass on him, but I assume that many people who do vote probably recognize the name. But he was recommended when we actually put this category together the first time. So
okay.
Was he from Orangeburg, South Carolina?
Yeah,
no.
He could have been.
No, you're thinking about Jimmy Union.
Jimmy Union, I'm thinking about. That's right. That's right.
Yep.
Okay. Yeah, this guy, I know for a fact that at some point he was part of NWA Wildside at the beginning. So that may have been, I don't know, the tail end of what he was doing. I'm not real sure. So Joe Pedicino, Leon Ogle, Les Thatcher, Paul Ellering, Paul Heyman, Ralph Freed. Is Ralph still with us?
Yes.
Yeah.
All right. Got to meet him one time. He'd be an interesting guy to have on the radio if he'd ever come on. Ray McKay, the original announcer for Live Atlanta Wrestling.
Yep.
Robert McCoy. Of course, that was Bibber McCoy as a wrestler. He actually promoted Augusta, so that's what he's being recognized there for. Sam Kent, Saul Weingroff, Steve Manderson, who I've heard a lot of stuff about over the years.
Yep.
Maybe you guys can add to it. I don't know. He promoted Augusta for many years, and I know that he, I guess, was kind of a key player with some stuff that happened around the split. What do you guys know about Steve?
Steve was a good guy. Very good. I liked him.
Yeah, I liked him too. I didn't know that much about him. I know when we come with Ann, he came with us and brought the building with him. And then, of course, when the vote came up again, I mean, when the bidding came up again, you know, we lost it. But Steve stayed with us through our whole run.
Okay,
we went to the auditorium to the bowling alley. That didn't go real well.
Right. Yeah. Elaborate on that, because you've told me about that before, but I've never actually known that story. Why did it end up in a bowling alley? I mean, what actually played out there?
Once a year, the auditorium contract came up for bid, evidently. I'm not sure exactly
how
it worked. Yeah, the Bell Auditorium. Not sure how that worked. Manderson had the contract when the split came, so we were in the auditorium. We kept our Monday nights and continued to run there. And the NWA office was running the National Guard Armory or something down there. And then whenever the bid or whatever came up, is NWA, of course, got the contract for the following year. So we had to have somewhere to run, and they decided we were going to run head-to-head with them on Monday night, and we went to a place, they called it the College Bowl, and all it was an old bowling alley. And they set the ring up in the middle of the floor, and one side of the ring, the ceiling was higher than the other side because, you know, if you've ever been to a bowling alley, the closer to the pins you get, the lower the roof gets, or the ceiling. And so it was a little bit of a unique thing, but we never drew flies over there. And the thing was, is you couldn't, because they were, NWA was down in the auditorium, and they were putting all the guns down there on Monday night. That was the big show on Mondays. And, you know, Jerry's talked about he had dropped Ted off at the College Bowl and then going to the auditorium and work.
That worked out good for us. That's the truth.
Oh.
And then, of course, let's see, finishing off that list, Stiffy Williams, promoter up in Cartersville. And then Tim Dix, who used to manage and actually worked with us here on the radio network for a while.
Yep.
So that basically runs down the eligible candidates for this year. Looking at who's in, Is there anybody on the list of people that are actually in the Hall of Fame that, you know, not that we're going to go pull them out or anything, but is there anybody that just kind of surprises you that they are in?
You know, to be honest with you, I've looked at it, and I don't think anybody's undeserving. I really don't.
I'm looking at it now. I mean, you know, how do you say somebody's undeserving? I mean,
Just going through the list, Aaron Newman and Jerry. You could probably tell me worlds about Aaron Newman, but how long did he promote?
Oh God!
He started in the
50s. Yeah.
And went through what? 50. And he was still going in the 80s, right? Because I know I've seen his name with some cards around, I want to say 81, 82 at least.
Somewhere in there, yeah. But there was another man that, of course, he never wrestled. He started off in it was called the Little Arena. It was very tiny. Then he built a sports arena here. That's way before the Civic Center or anything like that. And that's
right.
That's where he had ice skating there, too. That's where my wife learned to ice skate. That was her dad, of course. And there was not a guy around that loved the business like he did. He protected the business. He loved the business. He promoted, the East Coast over here. He promoted Statesboro, which was a hard town. I don't know why it was, but it was. He promoted Waycross, Savannah. He used to promote Jekyll Island. He would promote Baxley, Surrency. He had some good little spot shows around. But he was a good promoter, My wife, when she got off the road skating, her and her mother would post her to the town, and you know they did it the old way. Of course, they had TV, you know, and then when Leo was here, that's when they started doing a TV just for Augusta and Savannah. That made all the difference in the world.
Oh, Savannah had their own TV.
Do what now?
You're saying Savannah had their own TV?
Well, it was a tape done just for
what were they doing?
For Augusta and Savannah. That was Ray Gunkel's deal. Him
okay.
Gary Bowles put that together.
Okay. And then, of course, in 76, I know he shifted over to working for Crockett. And do you remember how long he worked with Crockett?
For a while. For a while. Pretty good while.
Yeah. Of course.
Well, tell you what, if you'll help me put it.
And
in
going on down the list, we got Abdullah the Butcher, Al Massey. Al Massey, of course, just going through history. Al was a former. He was a boxer. I'm not sure how successful he was as a boxer, but he. I do know that he did that before he started his wrestling career, and. As a matter of fact, I just saw some video just recently. We used it as one of our classic clips of the day. I can't remember who he was wrestling in that clip, but Bobby sees that every day. Bobby, do you remember just a few days ago we did on the classic clip, Al Massey was on it. Do you remember that?
Was that the one where he wrestled Larry Hamilton?
Yeah. That was a great match.
When did he start, Rich?
Al Massey was pretty much the baby face here before Gunkel, before Don McIntyre, before Gunkel, and he continued up, through the 40s into the 50s. He seems to be, at least from everything I've researched, the Ray Gunkel of his era, the 40s into the 50s.
Okay.
And then Don McIntyre kind of picked it up from there, and then of course it passes on to Gunkel, and we the rest is pretty much well covered. But yeah, Al was he seems to have been the top baby face back then. I've actually got one really good picture of him that I need to dig back up at some point and send that out because it was real interesting looking at him. Seeing that look, that 1940s look that he had. And that was the first match I'd ever seen him wrestle in, that clip with him and Hamilton. What'd you think of him, Bobby?
I thought it was good. You know, of course, I enjoy that kind of stuff. That was a match from what, I guess the 50s?
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, it's seeing Larry Hamilton work is something other than the Missouri Mauler. I mean, you know, the mannerisms and stuff never changed. But, you know, it was just, I loved it. I thought it was good.
That one, and sadly the best part of it, though, was that one guy that just kept screaming. I don't know if you remember. Get him, Larry. Get him. Go it. Yeah, you got him, Larry. All the way through the 10-minute clip. It was hilarious.
You know, I've never seen anything on him that I know of. Al Massey, I just...
Going on down, we got the Andersons, Zoli, Gene, Lars, and Arn as a collective. Then Andre the Giant and Gunkel. The Armstrongs, Bob, Brad, Scott, and Steve. A lot of people have asked about Brian not being included in that, but he really didn't work as part of that unit, you know, collectively as much as the rest of them. So it was kind of disproportionate in terms of his time with them in Georgia and what they did. The Assassins, Tom Ernesto, Joe Hamilton, Babe Zaharias, Bill Dromo, Bill Longson, Bill Watts, Bob Armstrong, Bobby Shane, Bobby Simmons, Buddy Colt, Charlie Harbin, Charlie Smith, Chief Little Eagle. What do you guys know about Chief Little Eagle? He seemed to be a pretty big deal in the 60s.
Yeah, I remember watching him as a kid.
Yeah, I remember as a kid, I saw him wrestle. Got to meet him. He came in and worked for Ann a little bit. I know as a booker, he wasn't very well liked. That's what I, just from stories I've heard. I've heard stories about Blassie, but they said Blassie couldn't stand him. But I never, other than just meeting him when he was here with Ann, you know, a few times, I can't really have an opinion on him. I know he's got a son down in Mobile that looks just like him.
All right, and then going on down the list, Dick Slater, Dick Steinborn. Hadn't spoken to Dick in a while. Hope he's doing well. Don McIntyre, Doug Gilbert, of course, that being the professional Doug Gilbert, not the Doug Gilbert from later years. Dusty Rhodes, Ed Caprell, El Mongol, Elmo Chapel, the promoter up in Marietta for a few decades there. The Fabulous Moolah, Frank Bettis. I've been asked about him before. He was a promoter in the Atlanta area. I'd have to dig back and look through some notes, but he pretty much ran opposition to, first of all, I guess I need to preface it a little bit by saying the origins of Georgia wrestling or Georgia Championship Wrestling, technically, I think you can actually trace it all the way back to 1926. A lot of people go to 72 because that was the TV name and this, that, and the other. But in terms of the promotion and continuity, arguably you can go back to 44. But, you know, when Paul Jones first took over, but at the same time, he took over something that had already been running for many years all the way back to 26. So that's technically what we at Georgia Wrestling History have recognized. And during the 30s, Frank Bettis ran most of the decade in opposition, and from what we understand, drew pretty good crowds with talent that was not the traditional talent that was traveling back in those days. Wrestlers, it wasn't territory, it was you promoted a city, you ran a city, and these guys literally got on trains or drove or whatever they had to do to get from one big city to the next big city to work for another promoter. And that talent would typically appear at the Atlanta City Auditorium. Well, Frank Bettis was keeping a career going, however modest it was. He was keeping it going for at least 10 years that I know about.
That's so interesting, that's how they did that back then, you know? It's really interesting.
Yep.
Luthez told me that he used to have to come from, and he said they drove. He said, but they would come from St. Louis to work Atlanta on Friday night and then turn around and go back to St. Louis.
Yeah, pretty insane. Pretty insane.
Milo told me that he'd be in like Birmingham and it'd take all night to get to Atlanta.
Jeez.
All night. You can imagine what the roads were back then.
Then you got Well, yeah, you didn't even have interstates. I mean, my God, no, it was 78. Frank Spear, a former Georgia Tech alum, football star over there, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, he's in the Georgia Tech Hall of Fame for football. He became a wrestler after his football career ended, and he ended up promoting, I want to say, if I'm not mistaken, he took over Atlanta after Henry Weber passed away. And he promoted for a few years in the 30s. He was actually a pretty top draw during his career in the ring. So that's who that is. Fred Ward, of course, we all know him. Freddie Blassie, Freddie Miller. The Freebirds being Michael Hayes, Terry Gordy, and Buddy Roberts. Gary Hart. God, I miss him. He was a great guy. Gordon Solie, the original Gorgeous George, Henry Weber. Of course, I just mentioned him. He was a promoter for, I want to say, from 1929 to his death in 36. Jack Crawford, Dandy Jack Crawford. I'm sure you guys got some stories about him, right?
Oh, yeah. And he's passed away, right?
Yeah, I think
yeah.
so.
Yeah. Jack McAdams, who worked a lot of the independent stuff in the 30s and into the 40s, and also worked for the Atlanta promotion. We tied a GCW over the years. Frequent winner of the Southern Heavyweight title that was around in that era. Jay West, Jerry Graham, Jim Barnett, Jim Landis, Joe Hamilton. Of course, he's already in as a tag team for the Assassins, but he goes in as well for individual work as well as his work as a promoter. John Contos, the original promoter that we tie to GCW, who basically started running in Atlanta, the first guy to run regularly in Atlanta after a few years of no wrestling at all, at least none of any major continuity. John Malden, who was pretty big in the 30s and 40s. Leo Garibaldi. Lou Thez, Luke Graham, May Young, Mario Galento, the Masked Superstar, the Monroe Brothers, Sputnik, Rocket, and Flash. Miss them. Tim Woods, Mr. Wrestling number one. Of course, Johnny Walker is Mr. Wrestling number two. Nick Bockwinkel, Nick Carter, big-time heel here in the 50s and 60s. Occasionally had a babyface turn, but for the most part was working heel at the top of the cards. Nick Patrick, the Oates Brothers. Ted and Jerry, of course. Ole Anderson for his work outside the ring as well. Paul Jones. This is, of course, the promoter, Paul Jones. Ray Gunkel. Ray Gunkel and Buddy Fuller as a team. Ric Flair, the Road Warriors, Animal and Hawk. Rock Hunter. Ron West. Scrappy McGowan. Sputnik Monroe. Stan Hansen. Strangler Lewis. Ted Allen. Ted Turner. Thunderbolt Patterson, Tom Mahoney, who was actually the first Southern heavyweight champion of the title that ran from 49 into the 60s that was ultimately replaced by the Georgia heavyweight title that ran all the way through 84, or actually through 81 when it became the national heavyweight title. He actually promoted Augusta as well as one of the original territorial promoters who worked with Paul Jones. Under the ABC banner. Tom Ernesto, Tommy Rich, Tony Atlas, the Torres brothers, Enrique, Alberto, and Ramon, and the Vachon brothers, Mad Dog Butcher, and the non-legit brother, Stan. And that's all that's in. Good list of people.
I should say that's a pretty impressive list, isn't it? And that just scratches the surface. Of the guys that came through here that worked here for a short time and went on.
I not being from Georgia by me saying this, but there was as good a match as held in this state as anywhere in the country. I mean, Florida had great matches, Georgia, the Carolinas, some territories were different than others, but I mean, actually, for what we did, we could hold our heads up with anybody. Well, you and know, everybody wanted to come here. Everybody wanted to come here. You know, short trips, money was good.
And I miss those days.
It was a great territory.
And you know, that's part of why we all started GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com, and then ultimately, you know, getting the radio shows going, doing the interviews, and getting the Hall of Fame out there, and getting as much of the history out there. Because you know, bottom line is, it needed to be documented. People needed to know how great the wrestling was in this state. It was more than just the TBS show that everybody saw on Saturday night for, you know, what. 76 was the first time it really started beaming outside of the Atlanta market to everywhere, you know, through 84. That's primarily the period a lot of the younger fans of today remember. Well, younger fans, guys, I guess, my age in their 30s and 40s. And, you know, now we're getting to the point where, you know, the younger fans of today, you want to make sure they know, you know, who paved the way for them.
Well, there's one guy that's name I didn't hear tonight that should be in there, that's done as much for the wrestling here in Georgia that's ever been done, and that's you.
Oh, I don't know about that.
No, I'm telling you.
Yeah.
You don't get enough credit for what you've done. I mean, really, and I mean that sincerely. I mean, you've done, I mean, who else has done anything like this? I mean, this. I mean, it's remarkable, and I appreciate everything you've done, and you know, you recognize me and my brother and all the other guys like Bobby and Charlie and guys that, you know, are from here. And it means a lot. It really does. And I just want to thank you for it.
Yeah, I'll echo that too. And I understand how you go through your cycles where you have to back away from it. I mean, this is a daunting task. I mean, there's just, you know, and I'm sure you're like everybody else. You probably got 20 people in your ear saying you ought to do this and you ought to do that, but it's tough keeping up with all this stuff.
And the matches that you've been able to pull up from the past, and I mean, it's remarkable. I mean, really. I mean, it's a lot of work. I mean, I just think you've done something that's you're not commended enough for.
Well, thanks, guys. I, you know, literally, when people talk like that, I don't know what to say. So,
make the check out the cash, and I'll give you the addresses later.
I'll take food stamps.
I'll do that. I ain't afraid.
But no, really, you don't get enough credit for what you've done. And like Bobby said, I know it's grueling, and it, you know, it can burn you out. And
oh, absolutely. Yeah, I've hit periods where I've literally, you know, woken up in the morning thinking just need to get the hell out of this, you know, and just walk away, just pass it on to somebody else and let them deal with the headaches. But
well, nobody,
you know,
would do the job you've done.
But by the end of the day, you remember why you got in it and why you're doing all this, and you just kind of try to keep it going.
Well, you've done an outstanding
job. But it's all
job
for you guys, you know.
I know. Listen, I well know that. I well know that.
All right, let's see. We do have a caller that's been pretty patient here. Let's see if they're wanting to get on the line with us here, calling from, I believe, Southern Alabama, Mobile area. 251 area code, do you want to get on here with us? Who's on the line? Okay. All right. Well, let's bring back up Charlie. Let's see what Charlie's got to say. Charlie, you with us?
Yeah, I want to ask you a question, sir.
Uh-oh.
Did y'all know who the promoter was before Fred Ward was at Macon?
Do I remember what?
His name.
Say
who
again.
The wrestling promoter was in Macon before Fred Ward.
Before Fred Ward in Macon. God.
You may have it there, God. He's the one that booked Jacob and the Angel.
Yeah.
I'm going to
Charlie
say
was the referee.
I'm going to say Farmer Powell.
No.
No, I don't know.
Dick Laver.
Who?
Dick Laver.
Oh, okay. So see, I did not know that. I did not know that.
Yeah.
And he wrestled here for a long time.
Hey, pardon?
He wrestled in Georgia for a long time. Yeah.
Yes, sir. He showed in.
A couple
there. He left here, went to Nashville. Him and Lupe went opposition against what's his name?
In Nashville? You talking about Nick Gulas?
Yeah.
Okay.
Was it Gulas back in or was it Whale?
Yeah. Gulas.
Well,
Gulas.
Yeah.
Okay. Now you say he was booking or he was promoting Macon before Fred Ward. Now there was actually a period up until between 47 is the earliest stuff I've got on Fred Ward promoting. I mean, he could have been doing it before then, but that's the earliest material that we've got. And that was, I want to say, late 47. And then by January 51, Fred Ward was actually working with Paul Jones at that point. So was he doing
Paul
Macon?
Paul went away one time.
What?
Pardon me, I'm sorry. Didn't Fred break away from Atlanta one time?
Yeah, they did that in 63 and 64. That's
what it was.
That's when Little Eagle was here.
Okay.
A Little Eagle, he was for Gunkle in McIntyre. I've worked with him too.
Charlie, didn't you tell me Little Eagle wasn't very well liked?
Yeah, no, nobody liked him. He came in office one day and he told me to dial so-and-so. I said, you got polio in your finger. He didn't like it. He wanted to fire me, but he couldn't. But you know, a lot of the bookers are a-holes anyway, you know.
Well, booking a territory was a tough job, and you really couldn't be friends because they all had their own personal favorites, but you kind of had to be legit because it didn't matter if you liked the guy or not, if he could make money for you, you had to use him. But
one thing I've learned, and I know this probably rub a few people wrong that listen to the show, but one thing I've learned is everybody thinks they're the main eventer. And
you're kidding.
By all means, I agree with you there, Rich.
I'm sorry.
I agree with you there.
Yeah. So you know, if the booker, the booker can't book everybody in the main event, so there's always going to be somebody pissed off at the booker in some way, shape, or form.
Rich, can I say something, sir?
You can.
Bobby said that just sent him a check. I thought that story you did on him one time in that book.
Yeah.
Was another paper for him, sir. You did a good job on it. And you also did a good job on me, too, sir. And I really appreciate it. I think you've got a lot of this business, too. Just like everybody says. And they get no credit for it.
Thanks a lot. And, you know, one thing I've never told anybody was Charlie actually paid me to do that interview with him. But
I'm sure he did. Let me tell y'all.
I hated it, too. I hated it.
Let me tell y'all something about my buddy Charlie Smith here. Bo James' new book is out.
Yep.
And Bo dedicated the book to Charlie Smith. He dedicated it, you know, because Charlie's been around a long time and he's a wealth of information. It's all useless information, but he is a wealth of information. But, you know, Charlie's had the big head ever since he saw that.
Yes,
you talk
sir.
About thinking you're the main eventer.
Oh, by all means, Sam.
Yeah.
Charlie's probably been in more main events than all of us.
You got that right. Except when I was learning how to referee. I worked the main event every night. Now, he got the money, but I got to work the main events while he was dressed and on the way home.
Sir, Taylor's been the same thing, sir. Sure, you wasn't about yourself. Rich, what do you think about this thing going in Rome in November?
The fan fest thing, I'm not real sure yet.
Yeah,
I've just seen initial stuff on it. We got an ad up on it at our site, but
I think
I don't know what to make of it.
I think somebody's fixing to lose a lot of money.
Yeah, that's a lot of talent you're pulling in here. Good luck with it. Let's put it this way: the ones that were run around WrestleMania that were here, and the one that was run here the year before WrestleMania. Charlie, you and I were down there at that one. I don't see it. You know, I know that Greg apparently ran a successful show down here when he came down. Greg Price last August. Outside of that, I haven't seen a successful fan type event like that. You know, wish them luck. I mean, you know, always wish them luck. I'm always skeptical because for whatever reason, the crowds just don't go out to these things in this area. I don't know why. Maybe Rome will be different because it's outside of Atlanta. I don't know.
I told a guy, I said, you know, he asked me about Holy. So I talked to Holy. He said, tell the guy I want my money when I get there, you know it?
Yeah. How's Holy doing these days?
Oh, not too good, you know. Me and Scrappy and Marcia and Holy, we lunched together last Thursday. And Holy was talking about the referee. He said, hey, what about that referee that worked for me? Scrappy said, you talking about Ron West? He said, yeah, Ron West. He said, how's he doing? Hmm. He knew him. You know, we told him once before that he died.
Yeah.
And he said, all he is losing a little bit, you know it?
That's a shame.
Yeah, they can't walk. Marsha has to do everything for him.
Yeah. Well, guys, we got any closing thoughts tonight before we wrap up?
I think you did a good job, Rich.
Well, thank you, sir.
Yes, you did.
You always have.
You're no Michael Norris, but you did all right. It's always fun when you do the show, Rich. I'm glad you called and we did it. I was getting into the DTs from not doing this last week. So, you know, this Hall of Fame thing, you know, all kidding aside, you know, as far as being legitimate, this is on a level as anything that you're going to see in the wake of a Hall of Fame as far as the way they're selected and the way that you get in. And I echo Jerry's sentiments. I appreciate the fact that I was recognized. I'm not sure I was if I was Hall of Fame material or not, but I'm glad I was recognized. I'm glad I'm remembered. I'm glad I see people and they remember the work that we did. And I'm just glad we're still here to talk about it and we keep it alive. And that's the only place it's still alive, fellas, is in our memories. And as long as we talk about it and can educate people to some degree of what we did and why we did it, then hopefully it'll never die. So I'm glad we did this.
I made it 3 years old.
Well, that's
cool. I made it 3 years and I keep plugging it.
Well, that's the goal about having it all out online is so that it'll always be there for folks. Jerry, you got any closing thoughts, man?
No, I just appreciate you being on tonight, Rich. You've done a heck of a thing for all of us.
Well, thank you. And I'm kind of doing this for a selfish reason. I wanted to get back in here and chat with you guys and get on the air and try to get my feet wet again and get ready for the return of Ringside Rap, which, again, I'll mention that again. Stay tuned for August 3rd. We're going to make an announcement about what's coming up and what you folks can expect from that. It's going to be a little bit different than what you've experienced before if you've heard our shows. It's just going to be a whole different concept, and it's going to be a lot more radio and a lot more good stuff and a bunch of new faces or new voices, I guess. Charlie, thanks for calling in tonight, sir.
Thank you, sir. I enjoyed it, sir, as always.
Always a pleasure to speak with you. Jerry and Bobby,
yes,
had a good time, and of course, glad to sit in for Mike, and maybe we'll do it again, you know, because one thing I do know is the show is quite popular, and I want to make sure we don't miss many more than 1 week at least at a time. So hopefully, as long as Mike's out on the road, either me or somebody else can step in here and keep this thing going, and that way we'll stop your DTs there, Bobby.
No, I appreciate it very much.
All right, guys, for everybody here at Peach State Pandemonium and at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com, that's going to do it here for us this week. We will be back next week. Mike should be back in the saddle, I believe.
He's supposed to be back with us.
All right. Talk to you guys later.
Good night,
guys.
Good night. Good night, everybody.
We thank you for listening to this broadcast, a production brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com and the GWH Radio Network. Stay tuned to GWH for nostalgia, upcoming events, and more. As always, GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com thanks you for your continued support.